Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 10 of Tracking Connections. This is Sarah. I'm here with John and Aiden, and our guest today is Rick Berry from Four Elements Earth Education.
Thanks, Sarah. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I've known Rick for quite some time, and I'm really excited to get into the heart of it. That's me, John, and Sarah. We're in the Santa Cruz Mountains in California on a beautiful day here in March, and I'll pass it over to my son, Aiden.
Hey, everybody. I'm coming at you from Silicon Valley, where it is also bright and sunny today. Lots of oak titmice singing and Buick's wrens, and it smells like daffodils. And I'm excited to be here with Rick. Rick Berry began with the Tracker School in 1986 at the age of 15 and has been teaching these skills for the past 30 years. After graduating from Humboldt State University, Rick honed his skills in the remote Klamath Mountain Range, where he immersed himself for 12 years in indigenous life ways, passed on to him by Gary Morris, who himself had lived with Yurok elder Calvin Rube for 20 years. Later, he spent 2 years in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey as a caretaker for the Tracker School, refining his tracking and survival skills. Taught with both John Young and Tom Brown Jr. through the Tracker School's coyote camps, and then served 7 years as director of the Children of the Earth Foundation. Rick is of Cherokee descent. His grandmother was part of the Redbird Stokes Stomp Ground in Vianne, Oklahoma. He has collaborated with the Sayakumni Maidu tribe for more than 15 years, creating the Foxwalkers Youth Program at Patapanaka Burton Educational Preserve in Nevada City, California. Rick has been the executive director of the Children of the Earth Foundation since 2019 and oversees the Coyotes Tracks program under the Four Elements Earth Education West Coast nonprofit umbrella. Welcome, Rick.
All right. Hey, thanks, Aiden. And thanks, John and Sarah, for inviting me today. And I'm calling in from Nevada City. Beautiful day here near the Yuba River, and the manzanita flowers are blooming. And it's nice to have a sunny day. So thank you all.
Well, thanks, Rick. Yeah, good to have you here. First thing I want to ask, because I know I spent 1999 and 2000 working with the folks at the Tracker School to help get their youth programs going. You know, I trained the parents, I trained the staff, and did some storytelling with the young people. I believe Tracy Pizzo was in charge of things at that point, and then later you took over. So how much of your experience of, you know, what I shared was still kind of in place when you stepped in? Because I have the feeling you're a little bit on the unconscious competence side. You know, you just saw things working and you knew how to keep things working. But what were you aware of in that time regarding, say, H. Shields or Art of Mentoring type stuff?
Well, good question, John. The interesting thing I'd have to say is that I went to the Mohican last summer to revisit where it started, you know, 20 years ago. And I just have to say one thing about that time, there was a lot more energy and excitement. Like there was a youthful energy. And when it started, it was pretty magical. And what I did was I was caretaking in the Pine Barrens the first year and came up the second year. And I think I know one thing that a lot of schools still do, and I think it's a common thread, is we have that opening circle with the kids, a gratitude circle. And I'm sure it's part of what you taught, you know, like we're going to get in a circle. We're going to have all the kids give a word of gratitude, a thanksgiving. And it's such a deep, profound, actually teach. It seems real simple, but it's the old way of the council. And the kids, right, they get to learn they have a voice. And that voice is important, and it's also equal to everyone else's voice, like in that circle, in a you know, in your H Shields kind of thing. It's a circle, and so that's a piece that's this old way where we sit, and the kids also get to learn how to speak, that their voice is important. So I know we do that, and I know most schools that I know of do that, and so I know that's one thing that's very, very common. And I know there's many other things we still do. And I'm, like you said, I think it's embedded in there of, like, let's say you have a, you know, a season, a day, you're on that kind of wheel, right? Of, you know, these kinds of seasons do certain things, lifetime, you know, all these, there's so many teachings within that. And then I put on top of that, you know, there's old symbols that have that, you know, which is even part of my own ancestry too. And so there's that common thing of you're on this daytime wheel, let's say in the morning, and then the, you know, the life you're in and also the season you're in. So you can go so many, and the natural world helps clue you in, right, of what you're doing and what the story of the day is.
Right on. Yeah, I will say that opening circle gratitude that goes way back to 1983, when Ingwe challenged us to find a way to start off and give the young people a chance to offer their voice in gratitude in some way, shape, or form to kick off. So that goes way back for us. But then when we began to work with Jake and Judy Swamp, who are now sadly ancestors, they really were excited that we were doing that, and they helped us to go deeper into that teaching. So I think that has been a staple. You know, it's pretty much how we start everything. So yeah, thanks for that reminder.
Well, Rick, I understand that you run a lot of programs for children, teens, and adults. And I'm curious, like, how you use natural cycles in designing your programs.
Well, we are right now. We say, you know, we're developing this community, let's say, or a village. Like, the village is more the people part. But then when we say community, we actually mean not with the greater community. What I mean is it's the creeks, it's the trees, mm-hmm. it's the stones, you know. I think we're coming from a place of, like, it's not like a natural resource. It's actually a relationship that we have to cultivate, you know. And this was something that my friend Gary Morris clued me in on in my 20s. And I think, you know, the natural cycle, of course, I mean, there's so much to, like, the story of the day. And that's something I learned from you, John, years ago. But then I hear it all over. I hear it different places. It's a very common thing of what's going on today in the natural world. And so you're talking about creating a program. Okay, we're going to have something they can do with their hands. We're going to have a circle. You know, we start with a circle, end with a circle. We have them something to do with their hands, you know, and then there's like a movement and there's a story, you know, but all those things are a combination of what's the weather going to be like? What time of year is it? You know, what's available to process? You know, what's a good time to have a fire or not have a fire, you know, in California? It's definitely all built on the natural world. And, you know, I'll go to say that part of this vision with Grandfather Stalking Wolf is, you know, all these people doing, you know, having people to be able to share this, especially with youth. But it's going to be a little different in every place because it's out of the land, out of the place. And so our place has this, and we're going to relate this way to it. But over here, it's going to maybe be this land, you know, in a sense that culture comes out of that. That is our model, you know. And so hence with Tom and John, when I was younger, it was like, oh, that's how you do it. But you can't necessarily, like, the way I think too, it's hard to set in stone sometimes. You know, you're going to have certain things you're going to have, like, in your so-called bag of tricks or bag of skills or things you can do. But then you're going to see, well, what's going to be the magical spontaneous teaching. But that spontaneous teaching does take someone who has skills and also is aware of not only what they're having inside themselves and where they're at, but where are their students, you know? So yes, definitely mirrored off the natural world. And, you know, then you go into the animals, and then there's a whole thing of, well, look at the coyote. What's the coyote doing? And how does that teach everyone? So that's a whole subject there.
Indeed. And, you know, many places, you know, you're running programs in California, and I'm going to want to zero in on your teen programs in a minute here. Because so many people ask us, what do we do with the teens? What do we do with the teens? It's so hard. But you're also working in Philadelphia and New Jersey and South Texas. And so those are all very different ecosystems. And so all of them you're adapting to, right? And I imagine that in some places you're working with existing indigenous teachings where, you know, if there's a model that's based on archetypes of directions, you're also deferring to what the locals are doing, right? What's appropriate for them.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting to bring that up because this is something like I finally realized even with myself, when I think of time, I go, I guess you say counterclockwise, you know, in my mind. And I always, and I finally was like, oh, that's the way I do it. Oh, I thought everyone did it that way. It was just the way, whatever, from when I was young, I do that. I start like in the South and I go up around like west, north, east that way. And I never knew why I did that. And then where I'm living, it is the way they go. they go that way. The other thing is, too, my Cherokee ancestors, they say, well, we go heart closest around the fire, around the center. And so I like that even more in a way, because it's not right or left, up or down. It's part of where you are. Where's your heart? And then you go that way. So there's all these different perspectives, but it still has that wheel. It's still like being aware of, well, which way are you going? Because out here, it's like, okay, so a tree's growing, or a plant comes out of the earth. Well, it grows, you know, earthwise up to the sun. And so they say that's for life. And so, you know, you take all these different things, you know, and how do you integrate that into what you're doing? And it's also like the breath in and the breath out. You know, sometimes you go this way and then you go that way. Or if you're looking at it from that way, it's the other way. So there's all these different perspectives. Anyways, I think that's all I'll say for that. But you asked another question, John, about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. I think, you know, what I hear you saying, Rick, is that this is really about awareness. This is about awareness and paying attention to what nature's doing right here, right now. Pay attention to what the people are doing right here, right now, and what they're used to, and, you know, how to adapt to that. So it sounds like you're just being very aware and flexible, which I think is an awesome way to approach working with anyone in nature. Tell us about your teen programs, because I think that was a big request. We've heard that a lot in the last couple of years from people. You know, I don't know how to bring this to the teens.
So the teens, so I'll go back just a little bit to, you know, Teen Coyote Scout back at Children of the Earth. But we started back there, and it was a really robust, it's like push the teens to the edge, right? That's what they're looking for, right? They want an edge, you know, and it's exciting. And, you know, sometimes there's explosives, you know. And so, you know, but what we did out here is in this for a decade, we did a Four Fires Rendezvous. Teen Rendezvous. And it was amazing. And it was with other schools to get enough teens to come. And also they got to meet other teens. Now we did that for a decade, and then we had the COVID time, and that, you know, and so now we're what we did, we took the scout kind of games, I call it, because when I've hung out with Juan Villarreal, the Southern Lipan Apache, you know, he's like, well, you know, it was pretty real for us, you know. People died, you know, and that those are his ancestors that, you know, were the scouts down there. But I'm like, hey, we have a serious issue with how do we reach these teens? It's a survival of teenagehood. How do we get them to be activated? And so using these games, these high intensity games, is a way we can do it. With this Four Fires, we did that and the teens loved it. And then we realize as well, we need to do kind of like something before it, because we get these teens and we're like, well, hey, have you slept in a shelter yet? Have you made a fire? Because, you know, can you really do the scout games without doing your homework first, basically? So we got to be like, hey, you got to earn this, you know? You know how that is, John, right?
No, I do, yes.
So, yeah, so we had to back up and be like, well, you can't just go play the fun game. You know, you gotta put some time in, you know, like earn that. And so we've gone to this thing called Wilderness Passage. And I call it Wilderness Passage because when I wanted to be like rites of passage, but then I backed up a little bit. I'm like, well, that's a, to me, an older thing of like, it's the whole community. And it's just, you know, there's a lot to that. And I think we do need that, but we're just offering like a slice, like a tiny piece of self-resilience skills, like being self-reliant. But in a way, it's also, you realize you're part of a bigger thing, you know, this whole other community of the natural world. But it is like, you know, Tom Brown, when I went to the tracker school in 1986, he's like, well, if you don't have these skills, it's going to be harder for you to have a close relationship to the earth, right? And so what we do with the teens, it's like, okay, you're going to make a shelter, make a fire, and you're going to do it this week. You know, this is the push, you know, to push them. And then it's like, okay, now you can come to the scout games. And, you know, the teens, you got to push them. You know, they like that edge, you know, and they thrive on that. And it's a time of their life they need to do that. You know, and back in the day, it might have been, you might not even have made it, because that's what it did. It, you know, it forces you to see who you are, see your edges. And then, you know, when I was 15, I went to tracker. Now the tracker standard class, we're sitting and taking notes, you know, and I'm like, oh, I want to do full survival, you know. So, but, you know, finding that edge is so important, especially with the teens. So that's some of the stuff we do. I have to say, though, inside of our schools, we have this, thing also where we get a few of them that you could tell they're local and they want to do more. And then they become our interns and then they become event. We have one guy, Ian Wolf. He works full time now, and it's amazing. He grew up in the program. There's people out there that, I've taught over the years that they run their own schools now. And so that's it's really cool. It's not maybe everyone, but it's some of them. There's an opportunity for them to be able to do this. And so part of my work too is to make sure, well, this is important work. So how do we all get paid enough money to do it too? Because if someone can't support a family doing this, and where's it going to go? So that's another effort I'm putting in. And to see the teens though, right now we have some teens that work with us. They work with new instructors that are adults. And we say, well, they're going to help you with the skills. They're going to help you with knowing the lay of the land because they do really know it and they're kind of raised in it.
Do you, besides Ian, do you have stories about how maybe parents have fed back to you gratitude for what happened for their teen or even from the teens themselves? If you just think back over the years, because you probably brought a few through over the years, right? Probably hundreds.
Yeah, there's hundreds. And I think there was a parent that said something to me one time. And I was like, They said, Rick, what it is, I love my kid to be with you because you're doing what you love. It could be anything, but I'm living my vision. And just to be my kid, to be around someone who's doing that is really important. And it's also something, especially with the teens, a lot of the kids nowadays, they're like looking at the world going, well, what did you adults do? And why are they going to trust you? Literally, it's true. There's a truth there. And they're looking at you like, well, and so what we do is like, well, it's not really my authority. Like, we have to make sure you're safe. We have to make sure, your parents want to send us back here, but we're also like, hey, the authority is the natural law. If you put a blindfold on and run through the woods and hit a tree, that's natural law. You're going to hurt yourself. And so what it is that we kind of set it up. So it's like, well, we're setting it up and we're trying to be as much like nature as we can and not being like, well, you got to do it because that's what I say. It's like, well, you're going to get hurt because that's what's going to happen. And so like, if you're going to use a knife, guess what? You got to listen right now and pay attention to the safety rules, not just listen to me because I said so. No, listen to me so you could be safe so you don't cut yourself. So, it's those kinds of things. And the parents, there's so many parents that have definitely thanked me and have been. And like I said, it could be these skills. Sometimes they're like, yeah, this is great because it gave my kid like this self-reliance, like for me, it was like, oh boy, I can listen to what is my vision, and not be so bombarded with all these other things because now I have this relationship with my greater community, like the earth.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think, that point you're lifting up, is also on your homepage, from the wisdom from Fred Coyote Downey, the ceremonial elder from Covelo, the children are always watching, and there's a longer quote there, if we fail them, when their eyes and ears no longer face us, they'll walk away from the things most sacred, so you embracing that vision of yours and, that deep love and passion you feel for it is exactly, especially what teens need to see. They're looking for role models. They're looking for something that could make them happy. And you're giving them permission to figure out what makes them happy.
I really recognize how you are creating life stage initiations that we don't necessarily have access to in modern times, but are very natural, right? So a teenager to have an initiatory experience that says, this is all of who I am right now. And I do the thing. And like John's talking about the role modeling, like the younger kids are seeing that, right? They're like, oh, that's what a teenager is. That's the power of what I'm about to become. And then it really acknowledging and honoring that life stage. And then I love the picture, the reality of these adults coming in that haven't had that, right? And the teenagers are then teaching them. And that how that is a symptom of our society. And it's fine, no judgment, right? Many of us don't have not had that or haven't been immersed in the skills. But to acknowledge that, hey, this teenager, maybe they're younger than you, but they've been developing these relationships with skills and with nature and their external nature, but also their own internal nature. and that, you know, people older than them can actually look to them for role modeling, right? And look to them to say, wow, that teenager essence, maybe I even have time to go back and grab some of that.
Yeah, right on. Hey, before I forget real quick, that quote. So Jennifer Villarreal has been helping to rewrite our website, right? And that's Juan's daughter. And the thing is, I keep telling her, I said, that was Fred, you know, Coyote is what we call him out here. He passed a couple years ago, but that was his quote. He'd always say, the children are watching, so don't complain. But then the other quote is actually from Jennifer. And I told her, hey, Jennifer, you got to put your name on that. And she's a little shy. So I did want to voice that. And also that it is Juan's daughter that has, she works for us, and it's amazing. And it's amazing to have like a female presence, you know, helping to start lead. So anyway, I just wanted to, we got to change that on our website, but I love that quote. Isn't it a good one?
It's fantastic. And that picture of Fred is so compelling.
You know, Jennifer's actually a great example of that, of the next generation sort of stepping up and rising into leadership. You know, and it sounds like, you know, to echo what Sarah was saying, you are doing really good work with sort of these natural initiation phases and the role modeling to see that happen. You know, I wonder what sort of thought goes into that.
Well, it's very strategic. I mean, to me, it's part of what John and Tom did to me back when we were at Coyote Scout with the kids, John, and you were there at the Mohican. Up in the boathouse, and you told this amazing story how you met Tom. You know, oh, it was with the turtle and the, you know, the whole story. You know, like, you got to practice camping, and you know, and just the whole story. And I always tell people a little bit of that story when I'm telling them. And I said, well, you got to hear it from John, though. It's great. So, and then I remember right after that, you're like, hey, Rick Barry's going to tell a story, and I was like, oh my God, what? Like, how can I follow up with that? And so I was like, well, I got this story, you know, and I remembered the story because I wrote it down and I journaled it. And the only reason I journaled it was because Tom, I told the story to Tom, and he said, oh, could you write that story down for me? Because I collect stories like that. And I was like, really? So it was like these two coyote teachers were like, they just got me good. It was an experience in nature. It's another whole story for, but you know, with this mountain lion. When that happened to me, you know, Tom was like, hey, write it down. I sent it to him. And then when John said, you got a story, I was like, okay, now I remember the story. I'll tell it. It was the first time I ever told it at the Mohican there. But at the end of the story, John drops this bomb. And he says, well, Rick must know the ancient secret language of the scouts or something. And I'm like, what's he talking about? Oh, my God, he got me so good. So that forced me. It gave me this need to go into the woods and go to my sit area like every day for like a year when I was a caretaker. I took it seriously. And
I'm glad that worked, Rick.
It really, you got me good. And I was like, so I was learning about sitting still and listening, you know, and people call it bird language, but it's more than that. It's like so much, you know, but I'm saying not just bird language, because I'm still learning bird language, but I had...
Aren't we all?
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. So, but it really got me. That's the thing. Just like Tom got John to go to his sit area because he's like, well, you got to practice camping or I'm not going to take you again. You know? And he called him every day and asked him, oh, well, so what? Da, da, da. And this got me really, I mean, it made me do it for a year straight, almost every day. And it was like a vision quest, you know, almost because, oh my, I got to go to that spot again. And so I'm telling you this story because it's embedded in me. I don't know if I can articulate what you're talking about, but I have seen, like, a good example is Carmen Phillips. She runs a school in the Caribbean now, Caribbean Earth Skills. I don't know. Maybe you guys have been down there. I don't know. She was with me when she was 15. And I remember, you know, whatever it was, enough of it rubbed off on her that she wanted to keep doing this. So when I have things like that, I think, well, what did I do? And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've had people tell me like, oh, well, you're a coyote man. I'm like, I don't know what I was doing. I didn't mean to do that, but it's John and Tom taught me this stuff. And it just, that's what I do. I mean, it's kind of like, it is a little bit unconscious, but I'm becoming more conscious of it now in my 50s. I'm like, okay, yeah, well, and so what's happening now at my programs is I have this guy, Pashu, that works with me. And he's been working with me for 12 years. And then he'll tell people, well, I came around and I just wanted to teach adults, but somehow Rick tricked me into teaching kids. And I said, I didn't trick you into doing that. But whatever it was, it works. And I think that coyote, you know, the animal coyote, the metaphor, the coyote on that wheel again, on the combination of what Stalking Wolf and Tom had, this target, you know, it was like these different worlds and different awarenesses. And it was like, okay, so if you're here, well, the coyote is on the edge of your awareness. Where's your edge? Where's your student's edge? And so that's what you're trying to find and push their edge gently out. And I think I've learned that from both John and Tom. And there's no one word answer, I think, but it is that adaptation of the coyote. You know, it's not really necessarily the trickster to me. It's also so much knowledge and wisdom that comes with it. And I'm always learning. And I'm always like, the coyote is also teaching me more than anyone. You know, you can't take yourself out of that. So I don't know if that makes sense to people, but it's, for instance, a student is coming up the way and okay, where are they at? But where are you at? And then you're going to be like, well, how much can I push them? Because a lot of times they have to have a certain amount of comfort. There's a fire going, it's raining, there's a tarp and oh, that's comfortable. And then they can relax and then they can have fun and they can start to learn. And then you can slowly push them. And that can go into their whole life, because a lot of times we have these damaging things when we're young. And the last thing we want to do is do anything to hinder them to have experiences in nature.
Oh, that was beautiful. And I really appreciate your description of the coyote, not just as trickster, because I do think a lot of us hear that as sort of the trope of the coyote, right? It's trickster, trickster, trickster. And there is an element of that, but your description of finding the edges and of leading with the wisdom and helping people to discover that for themselves is a beautiful, beautiful description. Something else that is really resonating for me as I'm listening to you, and I know we were talking about this before we hit record, your passion for bringing people together and for unifying and focusing on what we have in common. Like, I'm really hearing just a love and a caring of people in your words. And I think that seems like it's really reflecting. But I would love for you to talk a little bit about sort of your philosophy around unifying people.
This story popped in my head just real quick. We're in a circle a while back, and there was someone, John, who learned from you, I know, and was just beginning sort of. And the circle had to go a certain way. And there was this one kid that was outside the circle, like running around, and she's trying to get him back in the circle. And I went up to her, I said, no, that's okay. He's a coyote right now. That's okay. You got to let that go. That's okay. We're okay with that, because that's that energy. It's like, that's all right. He could, you know, he's got a part, you know. But I was thinking of that, because that's another thing of like, how can we keep the circle? But that's okay if that kid does that, you know. So that's unifying in that way still, I think. And I think, you know, unifying, I know people throw that word around and it's like, well, what are we unifying together with? For instance, I know we started the Coyote Conference and the Earth Skills Alliance and a lot of that, and the Teen Rendezvous, all those were to unify us, to take us out of, you know, we're all running these like semi-corporations, but we're not really in a corporate type of education. We're trying to get out of that. How do we work together? And so much of that is from the teachings from the Scout, right? You're in a group and it's like, oh, here, you got to not really have a leader, but all work together. Good luck. You know, so I think the unifying thing is to focus, you know, on what we do have in common. We do have a common vision, but we all do that in our unique way. And I think that was a direct quote from Tom. And those unique ways, we need to respect those ways with each other and be open to that and be like, okay, because see, with Tom, when I learned these skills from him originally, these are skills for all peoples. The four elements of Earth education is shelter, water, fire, food, those four elements. That's our representation of those. And no matter where you are on the globe, everyone is entitled to that. It's a common thing. So like, I think that's what Stalking Wolf was doing. He was finding the common threads that we all have. And then how do we get along with each other? How do we harmonize with the earth and with each other together? And I've been fortunate too in California to end up at a place where I'm working with the Siokomni tribe. And, you know, it's not a very large tribe and it's mostly just, you know, one or two people of the tribe, but, you know, he is open to unifying. What I mean is he says, when we come together, we're better. Because he knows, he says, well, even him being native California, he said, we can't heal on our own. And the people that are non-Indian can't heal on their own. We have to come together to heal. There's a dialogue, there's a relationship, because we're all human and we're here on this earth together. So even that, it's like there's things that can try to come in and divide us. And it's like, what are we teaching our children? We have to think about that again of like, well, wait a second. Are we going to tell them, well, you shouldn't do that because, you know, I don't like that person. You know, what, where do we come together? And so much of it is like, okay, you can, the fire, the shelter, like these skills are universal. And so not only do I think the skills emulate that, and like what we're talking about, the eight shields and the principles of the natural world. So that does unite us, you know, but like I said, you could have whatever different kinds of I'd say medicine or character, personality. And on my staff, I love it when there's even more of that, because all the kids come have a different personality. And so they're like, oh, I can relate to this person, you know, in this way. So yeah, and I know there's other elders I've talked to, and they say, you know, like Alarion from Alaska. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a really neat guy. He grew up traditional, like he knew that whole silence when he was 5 or 7 years old, of the true silence of just knowing, you know, he was raised like that. But, you know, he would say, well, we'll gather back together when our hearts are open and we'll unite. And there's been a time where we have been divided because things, you know, and this is even pretty long time now. And things got broken up because they were getting abused in some way. And this is like a 1,000-year kind of thing. And he said, well, we'll unite again when our hearts are open. And then, so how do we open our hearts and how do we be together with our hearts? You know, so I'm still asking that question to myself.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. That was just beautiful. And I'm really honoring how you are creating, as you said in the beginning, this culture in your programs and your community, a culture that is coming out of the land and out of those universal skills, as you said, and central on the relationships that we have with nature, and really appreciating how you are also in conversation with Indigenous people in that same way. And just that conversation of what does bring all humans together, and can we all bring our hearts and minds together around creating relationships with nature?
Yep. All right.
Well said, Sarah. Yeah, Rick, that was so, everything that you just shared was just so moving and so hopeful, really. The message is so strong and so good. And I feel really grateful for you taking time with us and sharing what you do and your deep level of commitment and service to people on the earth. It's really, really evident. And I just was wondering, you know, how do people find you if they want to find you?
Thanks, you all. Thanks, John. Well, we do have a website. It's the number 4 and then EEEE. That's 4 Elements Earth Education, but it's shortened, .org. That's our website. And that and then you can get into looking at anything we're doing, and there's emails. You can get a hold of us and things like that.
Well, cool. Yeah, you'll enjoy the website. It's very beautifully done. And there's so much richness there. I think anybody who has children or an adult who wants to explore this, to just be in a community that is so strong, I think you'll want to check that out.
Rick, as we're wrapping up here, my question for you is, do you have any requests of the audience, ways that they might go out from here and something they might do this week to add a little bit to their community?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess the thing, some of the greatest gifts I've given myself, if you have the time, but it doesn't have to be that long. It can even be 20 minutes. Just let go of time and just go for a walk. And it's almost like go for a walk with yourself. You know, that's what has given me so many things. It's almost kind of like a little mini vision quest, so to speak. You know, give yourself that time. And it's a gift, I think, to get to recalibrate to yourself again, because we can get really lost in this world. And that's what nature's, I think, willing to give us right now, a gift like that. So that's one thing I'd say.
Well, I can see that little moment of coyote mentoring from me to you has definitely paid off. A year at your sit spot just makes me really happy. And I had no idea that I caused that until just now, Rick. So thanks for sharing that in the same way that you didn't know that you caused something I don't know. And I wonder then if Tom knows. I think we just trust intuition, inner vision when we're working with people in this way. And you don't know what the results are when we trust that.
Well, there you go. There's a gift back to you, right? That you get that now. Ha ha.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today.
See you next time. Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.